Hello and a very warm welcome to the Steve Hart Radio Show, show number 13. Nice to have your company. Now, on the phone now, Suzanne Snively, Executive Chairman of Transparency International. The group is, the organisation fights corruption left, right and centre around the world. It's based in Berlin, but there are different chapters in various countries around the world. There's one in the UK, for example. We have one here in New Zealand. It's headed up by Suzanne Snively. She's on the phone now. Suzanne, thanks for joining us on the Steve Hart Radio Show. For those who don't really understand too much about what Transparency International does, can you quickly give us your elevator speech on the organisation?
The New Zealand chapter of Transparency International focuses on building stronger integrity systems and working on developing our already trusting society to have the processes in place to stay as good as we're perceived internationally. Transparency International itself was the idea of a New Zealander, Jeremy Pope, working with a German, Peter Eigen. When they were in Africa, they discovered that an awful lot of aid funding wasn't getting to its intended beneficiaries. So they were quite concerned about that. And sharing a common concern, they got together in Germany and started Transparency International. The New Zealand chapter started shortly afterwards, led by a number of people who were sort of retired diplomats, Michael Morris from an accounting firm, and Peter Perry.
How many members do you have now?
We have a little over 100. So that's an improvement. If you look at it in terms of a percentage increase over a short period of time, it is an improvement. But for something which is so important to our country, it's a very interesting challenge that it's so difficult to make it grow.
And of course, raising your profile does take a lot of time and not often a lot of money, doesn't it?
Well, fortunately in New Zealand, it doesn't take a lot of money. That's one good thing. We're socially connected as a country, but to do the depth of work required in order to be sure that we're as good as we're perceived, that does take resources. Only 5% of New Zealanders know about its existence, which is interesting. So you know, the group that were initially involved were very focused on building a chapter, but not necessarily on how to get the message out there to the wider New Zealand community.
I understand that each chapter is responsible for its own funding to keep the chapter alive and solvent. How do you go about raising money, and where does your money come from to keep Transparency International in New Zealand running?
That's the challenge that I faced when I became a director. I knew nothing about Transparency International I was probably new a little bit about it because I knew Jeremy Pope, but I hadn't really cottoned on to what he was doing. And what I discovered was that the New Zealand chapter didn't really have a revenue base. About the same time I became a director of Transparency International New Zealand Incorporated, a colleague who I had met became the executive director of the Cambodian chapter. And over that period, he's been able to raise over $1 million because he's got aid funding from the Swedes and also, I think, from the European Commission and maybe from other sources.
But you do get government funding, eh?
No, we do have some government members at the moment, and they became members in order to support the work on the National Integrity Systems Assessment.
How much does it cost to run Transparency International in New Zealand?
At the moment, it's not costing a lot because we've got a part-time accounts officer, a part-time administration officer, and a part-time, I'm the part-time executive chair. So it's not costing a lot to run. But I think for it to be sustainable long-term, we're probably looking for something that would be similar to other kinds of organizations you can think of that are kind of small, not-for-profit organizations. Look at the infrastructure costs, say, for an Amnesty International or something like that. Ultimately, the amount of work required to build the resilience of an organization like this requires somebody who's professional and full-time, I believe. The kind of model that we're working to is a full-time paid executive director probably at least a half-time accounts officer and a half-time administration assistant. Obviously, you don't want to have a huge burden of paid staff because you want the main focus of any not-for-profit organization to be on what it does, not on the admin. But in order to do things like to do more projects, we need to find to have the permanency of staff so we can attract the project funding for the ongoing research.
Transparency International's slogan, I'm sure you know it, of course, but our listeners won't, corruption destroys lives and communities. In what way does the New Zealand chapter of Transparency International help people's lives and the communities they live in?
We know that corruption destroys lives and communities, and we know that, in a sense, that very few people are aware of how well we score internationally, and that international perceptions of our lack of corruption are not as widely understood across New Zealand as they could be. So what we've been, first of all, doing is alerting people to the fact that there is this international perception that this is the sort of thing which is something that we need to understand better and, if it's true, be proud of, because it makes a difference to us as a trading nation in terms of how we trade, how we do business, and so on. This is perceptions of public sectors. It's not corrupt. It's not a perception of the whole economy. It's of the public sector. That's the phenomenal thing about it, is that the international perception is that we have the least or amongst the least corrupt public sectors in the world.
That means our public officials can't be or are unlikely to be able to be bribed to do favours for either other countries or businesses, I guess.
That's right. It means that you can get up in the morning and go about your business without paying a backhander, without paying a facilitation payment, without being expecting to have to pay a bribe in order to get a public service that you need. If you talk to most New Zealanders, this is their common experience. And I think what's not well understood is that this is not the common experience of over 70% of the world's countries. We should be very happy with that state of affairs. It's a really a phenomenal outcome.
Does your team actively investigate incidences of corruption that you might come across or hear about?
No. The point of how we work and how Transparency International works is that we're focused on systemic issues around corruption. So we're particularly focused on making sure there are systems in place that deal with corruption. And that's, again, the basis of the National Integrity Systems Assessment that we just did, the 12 pillars of corruption, so 12 pillars of society, and then look at how strong they will be to prevent and deal with corruption when it comes up.
How closely do you guys work with New Zealand's Auditor General? Is there a special relationship there?
Well, in the same way that there is with the other partners that we're working with, that we want to have, we want to work in partnership around the concept of keeping New Zealand as good as it's perceived, and around building strong integrity systems. We're working with other organizations in partnership too.
What pressure can you put on political parties to make them become more transparent with their funding? Obviously, just recently we had an issue with David Cunliffe receiving money to a trust fund, which apparently he had to pay back rather than name the people. Where do you step in to something like that?
Well, we're hoping to have a seminar soon, where we start to unpick the recommendations in our assessment in a public forum, and that would definitely be one of the areas where we want to have a more public debate, start a more public debate about this, and through that public debate and consultation, encourage political parties to think more. More about their funding. As we understand it, and through the evidence collected during the assessment, the parties themselves are fully aware they're going to have to do something. It's a case of how quickly they actually move on this. And I guess it's also a question of where will the resources come from going forward in order to fund them. I think, people are going to always be reluctant to let go of what they see as funding sources unless they think they've got some other answers. It's not an easy one in any country, and it's interesting. It's not, New Zealand's not the only one that scores badly in this particular regard.
Yes, I was going to say, which country could we learn a lesson from when it comes to political funding? Any good examples out there?
I'm not a good enough expert to give you the answer to that. The person who was the author of that was Dr. Bryce Edwards, and I recommend you interview him at some point because he's done a lot of work in this area.
Back to the government now. A couple of examples here, Suzanne. 2011, a recruitment firm was asked by the government to put forward a list of potential candidates to run GCSB. Three qualified names are put forward. Prime Minister John Key ignores that list and offers the job to his family friend, Ian Fletcher. Is that something that raises an eyebrow for you? Would you look into that and add it into your systems and investigate?
Well, we wouldn't go after that specific instance, but you will notice in our report we did in many cases raise the fact that we need a much more transparent approach to dealing with political appointments. The system of appointments to boards and so on is, I think, one of the challenges is that I think everybody agrees that they really need to always be merit appointments. And the grey areas come around when they think that there's nobody else out there qualified to do something. We think that all that needs to be less grey and more transparent what's going on.
John Banks, of course, in the headlines at the moment, he signed a return. As you well know, there were donations made to his 2010 campaign to become the mayor of Auckland, and he noted that he signed off a declaration saying that two donations were anonymous when it's alleged that he knew they came from Sky City and Kim.com. Again, is that something you also will take an interest in?
We're very strong in our report about transparency for all political funding. Why shouldn't political parties be transparent? We expect businesses to publish annual reports and be transparent, so why shouldn't political parties be?
And more recently, the Problem Gambling Foundation, very critical of National and the deal they did with Sky City over the new convention centre. So the Problem Gambling Foundation came out strongly against the new conference centre, and a couple of weeks ago had its funding cut by almost $5 million. Some people say that's a retaliation against it going against the government, and also it turns out, according to a New Zealand Herald report by reporter Simon Collins, that two of the six members on the funding panel had a conflict of interest. What would you say about that?
There's three things. The first one is that we do, in the report, look at the Sky City funding. And the thing that we think also needs to be clear is that a lot of what happened seemed to be happening in a way where ongoing understanding of spending patterns is going to be obscured because of the change in the way in which the transactions are being managed. So it's basically what we call tax expenditures are now going to be off the balance sheet of the government and being managed in a different way, a different entity. And that concerns us. It's the transparency over that. The issue about conflicts you and I just discussed, but what we're wanting people to be understanding about is that in a small economy, you might find from time to time that people are in a conflictual situation or apparently perceived to be in a conflictual situation. It's important that we recognize, too, the value of merit and experience and knowledge. And so our observation is, if you're transparent about this stuff, then people can see when the decisions are being taken about who's involved in the decisions. It's the interesting situation where, for some reason, people become want to go behind the scenes and not be transparent when important decisions like these are made, which do affect all of us as taxpayers. And it's interesting that anybody thinks that that should be allowed.
Justice Minister Judith Collins, of course, has apologised for not being completely upfront about her trip to China and visiting the dairy firm Orevida, where her husband is a director on the board. She's declined in Parliament to name the Chinese border official that she had dinner with. Is that something you'd be looking at?
The fact that that people were on to the minister's behaviour in China, I think, you know, she now must see the picture and the potential harm that could be done by her behaviours if she's not clear about them in the future.
On your website, Suzanne, you say you invite people to join and become members. What's the criteria for becoming a member of Transparency International New Zealand?
The main criteria is that you support initiatives aimed at building strong integrity systems.
And do you get many people applying?
We get quite a few applying every month. I really would love to have a much bigger membership, and I'd like more people to apply.
How many members have you turned away?
Very few. We'd really like to be exclusive. Not to be exclusive, to be inclusive as we can be.
The reason I ask is because I had an email from Grace Hayden. She's a fraud examiner and a former police prosecutor. She applied to join Transparency International New Zealand and wasn't successful. She seemed to me like a good candidate.
Yeah, I thought so too. Because I came in, fortunately, without the baggage of some of the people who were directors before me, and so actually didn't know about Grace, I basically was quite welcoming of the idea that she might become a member. The trouble is that if you look at her website, she is she's very strongly anti our chapter. And I don't think you can. I think people who want to be members need to be supportive.
Your LinkedIn profile, Suzanne, there's been some, I've been sent a couple of emails. I didn't ask for them, but they just came to me. Someone had copied or printed out your LinkedIn profile. She had said, showed you were executive chairman of Transparency International New Zealand Limited. And I know there's been some big hoo-ha going over whether it's limited or Inc. And on the same page, you're also down as director of Transparency International. Can you clear that up for us?
Yeah, I'm really very embarrassed about that. My problem is that I'm not a great LinkedIn or Facebook person. I reckon I get an average of 300 emails a day, and so I do my best to answer everyone's emails, which doesn't leave me a lot of time. And I don't get much sleep because there's a lot of work to do to build this chapter. And when I went on to LinkedIn, I quickly filled in the profile thing, and I was a new director of Transparency at the time, and so I just Googled to see what the name was. And, of course, Grace's website came up first. And so I thought, oh, that's it. So I put it down. But we're an incorporated society. Grace's obviously decided that she wants to have a very similar name to ours, and I made the mistake of thinking that she was the same as us. But I've changed it now on my LinkedIn profile, as you will see, and I did it as soon as that was brought to my attention.
Ultimately, Suzanne, would you like to have the funding to have, you know, one or two investigators digging around, looking for corruption and bringing people to account, perhaps a bit like the consumer organisation might go after a retailer who doesn't do right by its customers?
No, I think that's Grace's business. You know, that's what she's very good at, and that's a particular business.
I notice you have an ethics committee. What's the purpose of that in such a small group?
Every transparency chapter should have an ethics committee. It's part of the accreditation procedures that you go through in order to stay a chapter with Transparency International.
When it comes to minutes and agendas for meetings of Transparency International and its other committees, are they all publicly available?
Not at the moment, no.
Is that something you might want to do?
Absolutely. And that's the sort of thing that you could do, you know, when you've actually got a resilient and professional and well-resourced organization.
But isn't it a matter of just creating a PDF and organizing a link to it somewhere for people to click and download?
Absolutely.
What can people do at the moment if they wanted to see agendas and minutes for your meetings? Can they email you and have them sent?
No reason why they couldn't email me, but we're basically wanting to get in place a system where we've got the agendas coming out at a certain predictable time and the minutes and so on coming out at a predictable time as well. We, you know, if we're going to do that, it needs to be professional and it needs to be, I totally agree with you. It's very easy to get things on websites and for them to be downloaded. It's another thing to get things on websites that, you know, the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And that process, you know, we are working, I am working round the clock for this organization because I really care about it. But we have got a very limited staff at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, just from a journalist's point of view, I frequently will go and download the agenda and then later on the minutes of various councils around the country. And just by downloading and seeing what they've been discussing, I can get a very quick handle on what's going on and what's important to that area.
I've sat on lots of councils myself, and I know about this, and I'm a very proud supporter of transparency in this area. But they do have huge resource base compared to us. They've got full-time company secretaries as well as full-time management staff. So as we move towards being a more robust organization, you could bet your bottom dollar we're going to have all this stuff out there.
Okay. And just finally, don't want to get hung up on the agendas and minutes, Suzanne. I really don't. Is there a timeline for when people might be able to just log in, click in and download? Have you got a timeline for that?
I have a timeline in my own head, but it pretty much depends on how big a membership I can grow. If through this interview we can grow the membership more quickly, I can promise I can get you this stuff downloadable a lot faster. Can you help me with that?
What does it cost to become a member for listeners?
$80. And if you're a student, $20. And if you're over 65, $20.
What do they get? The members get anything?
They get the certainty that New Zealand is going to be a special place to live for their grandchildren as well as for themselves.
Suzanne Snively, Executive Chairman of Transparency International, speaking to me earlier. I did ask Suzanne during the interview there how much it costs to run Transparency International in New Zealand. She wasn't really able to give me a figure, but I looked on the organisation's annual financial report. The most recent one ending June 2013, and that shows that the organisation had total expenses of $269,547. Previously, in the previous year, it spent just under $40,000. So I think we can roughly say that it costs about $270,000 a year to run the show. Now, also, I did ask about government funding. I said, you do get government funding, though, eh? And she said, no. I think what Suzanne meant there was that they get no permanent funding from the government, because if you look at the June 2013 financial report, you can see that it got funding from the New Zealand Office of the Auditor General, $30,000. The New Zealand Treasury gave it $30,000. The New Zealand Ministry of Justice gave it $30,000. Statistics New Zealand gave it $15,000. The States Services Commission gave it $10,000. And the New Zealand Ministry of Social Development gave it $10,000. It got $55,000 from other sources and other donations too. Also, would like to clear up the situation re Grace Hayden. Suzanne Snively says that Grace Hayden, a private investigator, former police prosecuting sergeant, Suzanne Snively says that Grace Hayden was declined membership of Transparency International because Grace had a website called Transparency New Zealand. Grace Hayden tells me she applied three times and only launched her Transparency New Zealand website after being declined membership on her second application. Once she launched Transparency New Zealand, she applied a third time to Transparency International and was declined membership because she was running Transparency New Zealand. So I went back to Suzanne Snively. Suzanne says she doesn't know anything about Grace Hayden's first and second applications to join Transparency International. Suzanne says she only knows about Grace Hayden's third application to join Transparency International Incorporated. And that's about where we can leave it. And that is the end of the Steve Hart Radio Show for this week. The hour is up. Now, if you'd like to comment on any of the items covered in this week's show, simply go to stevehart.co. There's a comment form there. This is show number 13. Have yourself a good week. I'm going to leave you with one more track from Jazzar, and this one's called Take Me Higher.